The Chris Tedley Tapes.
In 1970, you formed the band Uriah Heep with Mick Box.
Yeah, it was actually the remnants of another band that I had with Mick.
Oh, who was that?
Spice.
Oh, yeah.
Which did nothing at all. Had one single.
London band.
Yeah.
And stuck within the London circuit.
Yep.
As a lot of London...
Never to break out.
Yeah.
And we got picked up by the Bron organisation, and they wanted to add a keyboard player. We did some recording with a couple of keyboard players, and then we picked up Hensley along the route, and he joined, and that was the start of Heat. New name, yeah. New album,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, and of course Heat really sort of got going with very...
Took a long time.
Very heavy, very humble.
Yeah, terrible name that was, wasn't it? It took a long time over here. It took to about the fourth album,
yeah,
to the Demons album, till it really took off here.
That was fantastic, I know.
We were almost at the point of giving up touring here.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
We just got just terrible bad press, and people were coming to gigs just to see how bad we were.
The early press...
Which is totally, you know, wrong,
but
naive.
But could I respectfully suggest that the early press was bad because most of the newspaper reporters didn't understand heavy metal music in its true form. Hey, I hope you don't mind me saying the word heavy metal.
I don't like the term heavy metal because I don't really know what it means. I certainly don't think it relates to anything I've ever been involved in at all. Because, I mean, Heat were just... We had songs and we played them loudly. And we were termed heavy metal. You see, all these terms and sort of totally fictitious names of music, futurist rock and all this crap that they put out.
I know.
Is really, it's all just music. It's all just rock music. Yeah. And to call it heavy or heavy metal or future, I don't understand it. Pop, it's all pop music. It's just what you happen to like. Yeah. The labels are given to us by the journalists who set themselves up as megastars themselves.
Yeah. David, why did you decide to leave Heap eventually?
I left, got fired, believe what you want to read.
I
just got fed up with it. To me, it was, we created a monster and we couldn't, or weren't allowed to change it. There were a lot of reasons, but basically it wasn't anything to do with anybody in the group. It was rather the people behind the group that, you get to a certain point, especially if I can be boring and quote American standards, you get to the point where you can be like top of the second division and moving into the first division of supergroups, if you like. And if we'd have been run properly and not more like a football team, which we were, which is my definition of how we were manipulated, we could have been up with the class of the Zeppelins and the Who's now. But it wasn't to be.
No.
So I got out many times and got asked to rejoin, but I was just going out on my own. I was doing what I wanted to do, and that didn't fit with the band's plans, or so it seemed. So they said bye-bye.
Yeah. Now, that I'm going to be a little bit sort of controversial here, because I noticed you said to me a little bit earlier on this evening that one of your favourite LPs was High and Mighty.
Mm.
Now then, two things. I personally like some of your early writing, things like Sweet Lorraine.
Mm.
That was one of yours, wasn't it? And then you come to a stage when High and Mighty, all the tracks on High and Mighty were written by Ken Hensley.
Most of them, yeah.
Yeah, they were. To me, that album creates a little bit of frustration. The band doesn't know which way is going to...
You're absolutely right. There's nothing controversial about it at all. There was a point when Kenny and I really didn't communicate musically.
Yeah.
And that happened, and that's when that happened, which was around the time of the album before that, whichever it was called, I've forgotten now, he decided to let me lead the writing thing, because he'd gone off at a tangent making solo albums and things.
He had, hadn't he? Yeah.
And he hadn't. No, it had done okay, but it wasn't the kind of way I wanted to go, because I'm a rock and roller.
Yeah.
Born and bred rock and roller.
Yeah,
he is really,
right.
But he goes off at tangents. Anyway, good luck to him, because I love him dearly.
Yeah.
It says here. We did the Return to Fantasy album, of which most of the ideas came from me. Me giving the band an idea and letting the band create it.
Oh, I see.
And then when it got to High and Mighty, I wanted a new producer. I was just fed up with the production of our albums. I wanted to get, you know, you can't go on doing the same thing forever. And basically, when we went in, Kenny had done a load of songs for another solo album.
Yeah.
He'd done some demos, which I'd help him do in Los Angeles. And
we
came back, and as usual, the record company said, "We want an album now." Nobody got anything prepared. So I said, "Okay, we'll do your tunes."
Yeah.
"We'll do your tunes this tune. We did my tunes last time." And it didn't work.
No.
And I got fired.
Oh, dear.
There you go. No, I didn't care. I was the happiest man in the world to get fired from that band. Anybody who's been in that band.
Yeah. Well, so, all right, then, I'll tell you what.
It's worse than the army.
Yeah.
I've never been in the army.
Oh, worse than the Big Arnott Relay.
this is a great pleasure. Great honour.
Ah, super. Now then, you formed Rough Diamond very, very quickly then, along with Clem Clempson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what exactly happened there?
Not a great deal. I was fed up with being on the road, so I was going to come off the road. An old friend of mine, Jeff Britton, he'd just left Wings, he'd been playing with McCartney for about a year now, phoned me up and said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I think I'll make a solo album." So he said, "Oh, well, I'm around to play the drums if you need anybody."
Yeah.
And the next day, he phoned me back and he said, "No, you should form a band and be the front man again." So I thought about it.
Which was logical. That was dead logical.
Well, logical or illogical, it's what I decided to do.
Yeah.
And I wanted to play with a good guitar player, and I knew Clem, and tracked him down.
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing anything much at the time. And we got together, and I know Clem's a strange character to work with. He's very quiet, and he's very introvert. And in fact, to cut a long story short with Rough Diamond, it all started in a big sort of burst of publicity, which wasn't really what we wanted, but it's what the powers that be wanted. And we did a few small dates around England, like we're doing now for this environment.
Yes, I'm with you, yeah.
And went to the States, and that was quite successful. But I think the American side of things sort of changed the flavour of the music, and they wanted to go into more of a jazz rock fusion thing, and that wasn't my thing at all.
No, dead rock, I agree.
I could just feel the shadows of the old Heap thing creeping up again, so I just went, "No, you do your thing, I'll do my thing. I'm going to go and do what I want to do," which was be on my own for a while.
Yeah, but the typical Byron voice was behind this. It was came over very, very strong, especially on numbers like Hobo and By the Horn and Looking for You.
Scared's my favourite track on it.
Right, let's get back to current times now, where the Byron Band is at the moment, and you've got a new LP. You've got a new LP in the pipeline, but you've got a new single available in the shops on Friday.
Yeah.
Now, this is called Rebecca from the Byron Band. Now, this is your second single, isn't it, actually?
Yeah, it's the second single, but to be truthful, it's the first one that actually has the band that is on the road playing on.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because the first single had a couple of the musicians, but not all of them, because the idea for the band has been in the pipeline for about a year, and just waiting for the right opportunity to go, getting the right management and getting the right things behind us.
Yeah.
And that happened just recently, and everything's happened very quickly in the last couple of months, like finding the right musicians, rehearsing, recording, and doing this little tour. Just to get everybody to know each other.
Yeah, that's right. But of course, the first single sold very, very well. I mean, it got into
the
charts. It did. It got into the commercial charts.
Did it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So it must have
got into somebody's heavy metal chart. Peanut chart.
It must have been a little bit frustrating starting a new band for starters, wasn't it? Really, because during the absence of from your British scene, which you didn't do a great lot over here, a number of new bands have come to the fore, like Iron Maiden, Saxon and Samson and that, and they've made a bit of a killing in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, an established man like yourself, virtually, you might say, has got to start again from fresh.
Yeah, but that's part of the fun.
I see.
That doesn't bother me at all. I mean, it's the other bands that have come through, that isn't, on my part, that isn't laziness, that I didn't bother to go out on the road. I chose to come off of the road, and obviously, it's a very fast-moving business, and there are always people to come through and take your place, and good luck to them. So that the challenge is now from us down to them, if you like.
Rather like what Cozy Powell said in a newspaper article the other week, too. He keeps liking to come back and come back.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the whole fun of it. I mean, there is a great deal of, for the most part, in my experience, there's a great deal of friendship goes on between bands. And we're always saying, "Yeah, we're going to blow the off you tonight."
That's right, yeah.
And, but that's all part of the fun. I mean, it's all hype, because if you do get into a situation where you've got maybe one or two mates in another band, and you're maybe supporting them, or they're supporting you, the whole situation could be the reverse in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
And you're trying to blow them, they're trying to blow you. Yeah, but it's all good fun, and you all party afterwards. But that doesn't worry. I mean, there's room for everybody. There's room for us, and there's room for Saxon, and there's room for Cliff Richard. Yeah.
Yeah. But you must admit, I'm sure you must have felt this frustration before when you were a support band, and when the headline band has sort of tried to retrieve all the limelight, like they've had the best lighting, the best mixing, etc. Surely you must have received.
Doesn't bother me at all.
No, you're that determined. You're going to go and blow the.
I just go on and do what I do, and the rest of the band just does exactly the same thing. I think we've all been. Not we've all been around too long. We've all been around long enough to realise that eventually it's the music that does the talking, and the show comes from within yourself. You can have as many light flashes and explosions and play as loud as you like, but eventually people will relate to the actual vibe they're getting from you and from the songs.
Yeah. Now, what do you think, for instance, all right, you're talking about the sort of flashing lights and flash bombs, etc.
Yeah.
What is your sort of opinion on these flash bomb and sort of stage effects, like Kiss? All right, there's an ideal example, Kiss.
It's a bit of fun for a minute, but after that it's a gigantic yawn as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like many rock bands, if people don't believe this. I really don't like many rock and roll bands.
No.
I don't.
Who are your favourite bands, David?
Mine.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, well, that's obvious. Yeah, well, that's a blatantly obvious statement.
No, I like bits and pieces of probably the most popular bands of everybody else, like, you know, the Rainbows. I can't stand Motorhead. That'll alienate some people out there, actually. I like them as people, I just can't stand the music.
No.
Yeah, Rainbow are a good band. Zeppelin were a good band.
Zeppelin,
The Who,
superb.
Stones, people like that.
Yeah.
Lots of people from the old school.
Yeah.
A lot of American bands, which aren't quite so heavy, like, you know, I like the Eagles. I like a great cross-section of music. I like melody, but and I like rock.
Yeah.
I like 50s rock and 60s rock as much as the 60s. We're getting a rebirth of the 60s rock boom now, which led into the sort of what they call heavy metal.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever was the swine who invented that word.
What's Shaky Stevens and people like that?
Well, that's 50s, yeah, it's more sort of rockabilly stuff that he's got into.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about sort of the late, the 50s, the Eddie Cochran's, the Buddy Hollies, which laid the foundation, which made everybody start to want to play guitars.
And Jerry Lee Lewis, of course, who's very ill in hospital at the moment,
apparently,
isn't he?
Apparently,
yeah, bad news. Yeah, in fact, it's totally bad news. Have you been influenced yourself as a singer? You've got a very distinctive voice. It was very distinctive with Heap. It was very distinctive with Rough Diamond and with the Baron Band. I've been at home doing a bit of homework, obviously, listening to the old albums, mixing them with the new singles, etc. It's so distinctive, it's unbelievable. Who were you influenced by originally? There must have been somebody. Everybody has a sort of a major influence somehow. And I can't put a name to it.
I've been asked that a lot of times. I don't know whether it's so much influence. I've had my favourites along the way, right back to the Everly Brothers, right the way through, of singers and harmony and stuff like, and melody a lot. But I can't really, there isn't anybody that I've modelled myself on. I think anybody that you've seen moving well on stage or portraying something on stage, something you can relate to vocally or visually or something like that, I mean, it all sticks somewhere in the back of your mind and it comes out somewhere in your own act. But I think with me, I think with me it's more subconscious. Some of the lyrics I write, I read them afterwards and think, God, what was I on about? Yeah, but to a lot of people they mean things, and maybe subconsciously they mean something to me, but I can't really qualify the question in any sort of context of an answer, because I've never modelled myself honestly on anybody.
Well, let's put this to the vote of our very, very good
listeners. Yeah, see if they know. See if you know who it is. Yeah. I don't know.
David Barron, you've been great fun, great company. Thanks very much indeed for coming to Rock Relay, and the very best of luck with the single sales for starters, then the LP sales and your tours. And come and see us again real soon.
I shall do that.